Thank you guys for coming out on, I know daylight savings, the day after daylight savings is tough. It's tough. So you guys get all sorts of extra credit for being here. I wanted to introduce Amber Apps. Amber is, there's much to say about Amber. I met Amber through her brother, who is one of the lifers in the program. Her brother, Oscar, is one of the lifers in the program. She also has, and he's currently, because SCI closed down, he's currently at Somerset. One thing that happened that people are probably aware of, but when SCI closed down, they moved all of the men who had been able to be near their families in Pittsburgh, right, got moved all over Western PA, right, so a lot further now. So now Oscar is in Somerset, and her brother Nathan is at Fayette. Amber is a wears many hats, has many jobs, is one of the most active and diverse people that I know in the things that she does. She runs her own shop in Bloomfield, which is called the Arts and Craft Botanic and Occult Shop. She is also the Chief Operations Officer of the Bloomfield Garfield Corporation. So she's running, getting the businesses and, you know, into that area, that now booming area. She also teaches frequently various classes at the college level and has been doing so for 16, aha, hello Norm, for 16 years. She also is a performer. She's a hip-hop performer. She performs under the name Hollywood, and she is actually last year at the YEP Festival, she organized the whole you put together the entire hip-hop day or hip-hop, you know, events at the YEP Festival, and was also performing as part of that, and then she'll be doing that again, or some version of that again this year. So kind of a big deal stuff. She is, she has a whole bunch of dates lined up, so she's a very active hip-hop performer. And yeah, she does all sorts of other stuff too, but she stays very, very busy. And anyway, so now she also speaks to us. So here she is, Amber Epps. There we go. I had to turn it off because I didn't want everybody listening to me talking to Elaine earlier. Hi, everybody. So thank you for coming out, like Elaine said, during daylight savings. I know that can be rough. It's rough on us as well. So my name's Amber. As Elaine said, we met a couple years ago. My brother was part of the think tank program that she was running along with Norm, who just joined us in the back. And there was an art show going on at Duquesne University that featured different pieces from some of the men that were incarcerated that were in the program. And the first time I met Elaine, like I said, was at Duquesne, and I met her there, and I looked at the art, and I was talking to her, and I just started bawling in the hallway at Duquesne. And, it, you know, we didn't know each other, so it was like, well, do we hug? You know, how do we fix this? Because she's upset, and I'm the only person here. And so we kind of did this awkward robotic hug thing, and now we're a little friendlier. our hugs are a little more seamless. I'm a crier, so if I cry today, it's nothing new. Okay. So my brother Oscar and my brother Nathan are both incarcerated. As she mentioned, Nathan is at SCI Fayette, and Oscar is at SCI Somerset, where he's serving a sentence of life plus 10 to 20 years. So unless something happens, my brother will never be married, he'll never have kids, he'll never have a regular job outside of the institution, he'll never get to go to taco night, here it comes, and he'll never get to do all of those things that we don't think about. There's a lot of things that we take for granted in our daily lives, and we don't think about the people who are affected by the actions of the people that they love. My mom, more so, has been the most affected by the situation.
She goes and visits my brother about once a week, regardless of where he's at. She gets in the car and she drives. My mom's 60 years old. She's spent all of her inheritance, her retirement money, on lawyer fees. Thank you. I told you that was going to be easy. And, you know, I listened to my mother talking about how, you know, she always imagined that at this age she would be getting ready to retire, but instead she's busy working overtime to pay for attorney fees and make sure that my brother has the things that he needs. And when I think about my life, I'm no stranger to the prison system. The first time I was in a prison, I was 2 years old, and I remember it. We went to visit my brother's dad, who my brothers weren't born yet, but my mom met a man who was incarcerated, and she fell in love with that man, and so we would go to visit him, and I remember specifically going on these visits at 2 years old. I remember eating gross cheeseburgers and apples out of the vending machine at a picnic table, but when you're 2 years old, I guess a cheeseburger is a cheeseburger. So, my first experience in a prison was 2 years old. After that, growing up as a teenager, I knew many people who would be incarcerated, and it became part of my regular life. And just through our talks at the meetings we've been having, it just started to occur to me that, you know, this is not a part of everybody's regular life. You know, I am part of a community of people who know many people who are incarcerated. It's not even something we think about. It's not like we go, oh, wow, you have a brother that's in prison? It's like, oh, yeah, my brother's locked up. It's just, you know, average. It's like an everyday thing. When Oscar was arrested for what he's currently incarcerated for was around the beginning of 2006, and I was pregnant with my third son. So I have a child who's never met my brother outside of prison. Fortunate enough, I'm a silver lining kind of person. I do believe that being incarcerated has possibly saved both of my brother's lives. I have three sons. None of their fathers are involved. So the two brothers that I have who happen to be incarcerated are the father figures in my children's lives. My children go and visit my brothers with my mom or with myself. And again, it's just part of their routine. They don't think about it. We're just going to see Uncle Oscar. When are we going to Uncle Oscar's house again? That's what they thought it was growing up. And now that they're a little bit older, they understand that it's not his house. It's just where he is housed. Not where he prefers to be. When I met with Elaine this morning, I had a picture of my brother Nathan stretched out across my old black leather couch, and I'm sorry to say, yes, I had a black leather couch. I would never again own a black leather couch. And we thought, you know, wow, you know, that at some point these people had regular lives. They were in homes. They were laying on furniture. They were making meals. They were driving kids to school. They were doing average everyday things that they're now no longer doing. They're doing things that are based on a routine that they are told that they have to be a part of. So I have a piece of writing here from my brother Oscar, which is something that's going to go into the book that we're working on. And this piece is entitled, Why Did They Give Up On Me? Why did they give up on me and throw away the key? Yes, mistakes were made, but change is at hand. Turn from a boy to a man, trapped behind these walls. I've seen many men fall and succumb to death, but I've seen others never rest until change comes. Check your gun at the door and join this war of our minds while we're here doing time. Never waste a chance to get hands on this problem we have that's getting bigger. I'll do years if I pull this trigger. Now, I'm walking it out wearing browns, dressed the same like a clone, or better yet, maybe a clown. Go and get my nose, the same color as a rose. It's pretty funny. Get my mirror, who's the dummy now? Hear those doors close, nothing's funny now. So get ready to dance with the devil in the pale moonlight. You better learn to fight or quickly run, because the war is on. Till death do us part, from the start to the finish, it never ends. A lot of people are quick to pretend they can't be broken, but it happens daily. The Commonwealth says, forget you, pay me, but not with money, but time, and I want all mine, and if you get out of line, I'll beat your behind. Instead of investing in change, they really don't care, so it's up to us to share our thoughts and knowledge in this convict college, where we're being watched like hawks trying to stop our show. But it goes on and never ends. We're going to win and see change someday. So we didn't even know that my brother wrote poetry until he was incarcerated. I'm trying to get my thoughts together without crying again. Sorry. So as I mentioned, in the beginning of 2006 is when my brother was arrested. And as I mentioned, I was pregnant at that time, and all I could think of was that my brother may never see my child, like, in my home and play with him in those kind of circumstances. And that's when it also started to hit me that he wouldn't be able to participate in the other normal activities of daily life like we do. Like, hey, can you run to the gas station and get me a Krispy Kreme donut? He cannot do that for me. I thought about, what if I get married one day? My brother won't be there for that. So I don't want to get married. If my brother can't be there, I don't want to do it. One of the most recent times I went to see my brother, he said, wow. He said, I'm going to be 33 this year. And he said, do I look 33? And he said, I still feel like I'm 19, because that's how old he was when he got locked up. So it's very hard for me to talk about things to my brother. He always wants to know what's going on. You know, what we're doing, you know, how's work, how's the kids, things like that. And all I should say, nothing new here, because I feel guilty talking about all the fun things that we're doing that he can't participate in. And I know he wants to know, and that he may be trying to live life through us. But as I said, I feel guilty, and I don't want to feel like I'm rubbing these things in his face. That, oh yeah, we went to Kennywood, we had a great time, or even we went to Newark, New York, and visited my family, because he's not going to be able to do that. So a lot of times I don't know what to say to him. I don't go visit my brother as much as I should, because again, I feel guilty. I don't know what to talk about. And I'm a person who likes to be in control, other than right now, I'm not in control of myself. And I know that when I leave that place, I can't take him with me. People know I'm a control type of person. Oh, do you need that, Elaine? Well, let me help you make that happen. But I can't just make a phone call, or I can't write a letter and say, hey, I'm coming to pick up Oscar Brown. I need you to have him ready at the door. I'll be there in 15 minutes. You know, that the system doesn't work like that. When you have someone who's incarcerated, you realize how little power you do have. And you're at the mercy of someone else's judgment and someone else's perception of how important things are. For example, there are some new things in regard to my brother's case, and my brother had his lawyer file some paperwork and send to the judge. Months and months and months and months and months and months and months went by, and the judge still hadn't reviewed the paperwork, where all he had to do was read it and say yes or no. So finally, with a little push, the judge reviewed the paperwork and said no. But if you're like me, if I'm purposely not doing something and I get a push to do it, I'm not going to be really excited to do it, and I might just, you know, not actually do the thing wholeheartedly as I should. But again, my brother is at the mercy of this person's time and judgment.
You can't really talk that much about it.
Yeah.
It's still pending right now, is part of what...
Yes. A big part of what hurt my brother in his case was that there was a person, an informant that they brought in to testify against my brother. And this was a person that my brother never met. never talked to, doesn't know, never heard his name before, but yet testified that my brother admitted the whole crime to him while they were at the Allegheny County Jail. My brother never met this person. Because I'm my own type of detective, I tried to find more information about this person and found out that this guy had been used as an informant in another homicide case. His name is even mentioned in a book that's been published as the informant in this case. And it was the case years ago. There's a state trooper who was involved with the wife of a dentist or something, and then someone got killed. So this person was also the informant in that case. And I thought, how strange that everyone who, you know, people who commit murder just feel really comfortable telling this guy, like, hey, I did this thing, and, you know, I planned it, and I went, and I was, you know, doing all this stuff, and then I killed a guy. What we later came to find out is that this person was facing his own sentence, a very lengthy sentence, and had it significantly reduced by testifying against my brother. I mean, a reduction of over 20 years in a sentence. And this was not revealed at my brother's hearing, which violates my brother's constitutional rights. But this is kind of where we're, one of the reasons that we're caught up with the current case as it is going back to represent that information. And although, you know, two fairly logical people, like I assume that we are in this room, it would make sense. Like, wow, his constitutional right was violated. Something should be done by that. I mean, something should be done about that. Again, we're at the mercy of some other person who gets to decide how important it is that the paperwork is responded to in a timely manner, and we just have to sit and wait. And while we're sitting and waiting out here, and when I leave, I'm going to go to Elaine's house, and somebody's going to probably make us lunch, and she's going to give me some green tea, because she always does. She's very good to me. My brother just sits there, and he waits. And he finds something to do during the day. Luckily for me, my brother is very active. He actually just started taking some classes to work towards an associate degree. I can't remember what the school is, he told me. But he's working on classes related to social work. While he's been incarcerated, Oscar has taken on this job. It's like peer support something. I can't remember what it is. But he went through a training, and he works with people who are having mental issues in the prison, people that are trying to commit suicide or people just who have mental issues in general. And so he works with them. He talks to them. If they're acting out, sometimes they'll go and get my brother and bring him in so that he can kind of calm them down. So, you know, and he really enjoys that work, and it sounds like he's really good at it. And so when we do talk and he tells me about those things, he's very excited about the work that he does. And I just think how, you know, he's been locked up for, I don't know, over 10 years now. Now, had the situation not happened, or had he had, you know, proper due process, he could be out here doing this good work that he's doing in there. Or he could still be working with these men, but not while he's incarcerated. There is a study done that my mom read that said something like that if someone murders a person and does 20 years in prison, if they get out, they're 90% less likely to murder someone else than you or I are. Yeah. But yet we keep these people incarcerated because somebody else says so. Because the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania has guidelines that have to be followed, which aren't the same as the guidelines in other states, which allow them more flexibility in sentencing. So we're stuck by, you know, the Commonwealth's rules of how people should be treated. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we often don't think about the families of the people who are incarcerated. We see a criminal, you know, someone who did some heinous act, but that person also has a mother. They may have children. They may have brothers and sisters who want to go still be a part of this person's life, but it's not always easy. When my brother was at SCI Pittsburgh, we live in Penn Hills, so it's a 15-20 minute drive to get there. Now my brother's in Somerset. It takes a couple hours to get there, and it can cost about $30, you know, in tolls, and then there's gas. the last time I went to visit him, it was during that crazy, there was some crazy snowstorm going on. And this was towards the end of 2017, because my son was home from college. And we were still about 30 miles away. And I looked over at my son and I said, why are we even driving up here? I cannot believe we're driving up here. We couldn't even see the road. People were going 30 miles an hour on the turnpike. But I thought, I have to go because my son is home from school, so I have to take him to see my brothers. I'm putting our lives at risk so we can see my brother and he can have a couple hours of his day outside of his normal routine where he feels like some sense of family. He actually wrote another piece talking about how important visits are to inmates. There are people who never, ever, ever, ever get a visit. But then there are people like my brothers who get a weekly visit from, you know, their mom or some other person that they're close to. And just that time away from the life on the cell block, you know, makes them maybe feel like they're not actually incarcerated. You know, it gives them time to be close to someone, have a little bit of, you know, personal contact where you can touch another person, you can hug someone, even if you have to eat crappy vending machine food on a paper plate. When we come to the visiting rooms, a lot of times we're treated like we are criminals as well. There's a new policy where anything that comes out of the vending machine has to be put on a paper plate. You can't eat your Sun chips out of a bag. You can't eat your Skittles out of the bag. You can't eat your famous Amos cookies out of a bag. All of it has to go on a paper plate because they feel that this is a way to prevent drugs from coming into the prison. What they fail to admit is that the drugs aren't coming into the prison through the visitors, they're coming in through the officers. Right? Yes. I have an ankle bracelet. I'm not on house arrest or anything. It's just a bracelet that I wear on my ankle. and I can't get that through the metal detector. So how could I get cell phones through the metal detector? I mean, it's an ankle bracelet and I have to take it off. Women have to take off their earrings and their hair clips. So how would I get cell phones in there? So those things aren't coming in through the visitors, but we're being treated as if we are doing those sorts of things.
Underwire bras.
Underwire bras. You can't wear those. I have two what I call prison bras. I've had them for, yeah, long, long time. Over 10 years. They don't even fit anymore, but I'm not going to go buy another one. It's my prison bra. You have to wear it. Because if there's an underwire, you know, like I said, hair clips, you might go and think, oh, I'm going to look really nice. I'm going to go visit so-and-so. But if your hair clip doesn't pass the metal detector, you have to take it out. It's not a nice process. And it can feel a little bit invasive. Belts have to be taken off. You have to take off your shoes. They look inside your shoes. Our hands are swabbed when we enter the facility. The palms of your hands, the tops of your hands, and the outsides of your pockets to make sure that you haven't been in contact with any drugs before coming in. It was funny because my oldest son is 21, and we went to visit Oscar, and I said, you know, he's 21, he's in college. I said, just so you know, when you were out this weekend, if you came into contact with weed at all, and it's on your pants or on your hands, they're not going to let you in. So, you know, you might want to change your pants. And he said, I'll be right back. But I figured I should just say that now before we drove all the way up to Somerset just to have to turn around and come all the way back. And then I look at him and say, you know, we're risking our lives to drive up here and you couldn't change your pants. But these are the things that you have to think about when you're preparing for visits like these. I mean, that's best parenting moment right there. Mom of the year. Like, I know what you're doing, son. Go change your pants. The visiting rooms are very cold situations. There's nothing warm about it. They have children's play areas that are painted that might have cartoon characters on them. But in some of the facilities now, the inmates aren't even allowed in the play area, which sort of defeats the purpose of bringing your children to visit an incarcerated loved one if they can't play with them. So the kids over there in the inmate is over here watching the kid from across the room. It sort of defeats the purpose. They're also currently trying to ban Timberland boots. A sergeant was just killed. An inmate stomped him to death, and the inmate had on Timberland boots. So they're now trying to take the boots away from everyone. My perspective on that is that if you're going to kill somebody, you're going to find a way to kill them. It doesn't matter what you have on your feet. People can be very creative. My brother's facility has been on lockdown more than several times in the last couple months because people have been ODing. Inmates have been killing other inmates. And this is his reality. So he has to figure out how to navigate that and make sure that he stays alive. And sometimes I wonder how he even still has the will to stay alive, knowing that he may never, ever get out. I don't know if I could be as strong as he is. And sometimes I would wonder, it's been a while, but I used to wonder at first if he thought about killing himself and how that would impact my mom, if it would hurt her more or if it would give her some sense of relief because he would be released from the situation. And I'm pretty ashamed to admit that I've had that thought. And I think it's the first time I've admitted it, but it's the truth. And there are many people who commit suicide while they're incarcerated because they can't face the sentence that they were given, and they can't deal with the pain that their loved ones have to deal with also. Every now and again, my mom will call and say, "When are you going to go visit Oscar?" And I go, "I'm busy. I have a family. I work 5 jobs. I have a business. I have to do all these things. I got to go over Elaine's house on Sunday. I can't do all this stuff, Mom." But really, I'm finding excuses because I don't want to face that thing that I know is real. Does anybody have any questions they want to ask? Go ahead.
Thank you, Art. Question. A couple of us routinely go out to an African-American church. We had an ongoing book discussion. One of the fellows there has been incarcerated for a long time. We've talked about what that does to the community, what your sense of moralism. So I'm wondering, when you take your kids to see your brother, how do you balance, teaching them that this is common for them, but not what they should aspire to, frankly? Because in some communities, a lot of people are prison, and that becomes the kind of the expectation that that's the direction they're going. So how do you deal with that?
Well, I'm lucky to have a relationship with my kids where I can be very honest about things and I don't really have to sugarcoat stuff too much. Even when referring to body parts, my kids, they think it's hilarious because I just say things. So I'm very honest with them. I'm honest with them about the situations that occurred to get my brothers incarcerated. But also, because they're able to see what it's like to be incarcerated and talk to my brothers and see the kind of limitations they have, and they can't, wear the new cool clothes or the shoes, and they have to eat this crappy food, I think they understand that's not the life that they want to live. It's not glamorous in any way, shape, or form, because they've seen it firsthand. And I'm also very lucky that my kids are active in sports, so they're always doing something. So they really don't have time to get into lifestyles that we might think might lead them into, the wrong path. And I do talk about, I talk to my kids about, that I work really hard to make sure that they can have the things that they need. And I don't want them to ever feel like they have to go participate in illegal activities to get things that the TV says that they should have. So I think there are a lot of different angles to addressing that situation with my kids, and I do my best to kind of attack it from all angles, not necessarily with the intention of making sure that they don't end up where my brothers are, but just I just think that that's part of me being a parent and a single mom at that, knowing that they don't have their fathers there to kind of guide them on the right path.
Yeah. You said your brother's working on an associate's degree and your son is in college.
Yes.
I wonder if they visit, do they talk about that? Sort of the, it's not normal, but the normalcy of, oh, I'm taking this class or I'm taking that class.
Well, Oscar just started, so I don't think they've had the chance to talk about that, but I didn't think of it that way, but it's kind of neat. But I can see my son being really excited to talk to him about that, because Oscar, he's really excited about taking those classes. And then, you know, I'm thinking, great for him, but then I'm also thinking, you know, will he ever actually get to use this degree that he's working on? And I'm an optimist, sometimes to a fault, and I do believe that one day he will be able to use that. It may not be anytime soon, but I, in some way, shape, or form, my brother's coming home, and I know that. But I think that would be an interesting conversation for them to have. Luckily, I'm not in college anymore. We can't have three people in the family in college. It's too much. It's too much homework. No, I'm done with that. Anybody else?
You may have talked about this, but it would be beneficial for the family and inmates if they could have Facebook-like communication, social media for some time. I gather that's not a possibility.
Well, the closest that we have is we can email. Now, both the state and the federal facilities have email. Not all of the facilities are on email now, but for the state institutions, there's something called Connect Network. I have an app on my phone, so I can send emails to my brother. We have to pay for them, but they're relatively cheap. You can send like 20 emails for $5 or something like that. And they have tablets that, you know, obviously they have to pay for, that they can hook up to a machine and it will download their messages and they can read them and then they can respond. They can also download music to their tablets. So, I mean, it gives them a little glimpse of what we have going on out here technology-wise, but not necessarily the full gamut. But with today's society, as busy as we all are, it's so difficult to find the time to sit down and write letters, especially when you have so many people that you love incarcerated. So the email thing is extremely helpful, especially since, you know, a lot of us are on the computers all day anyway. So I just sit down and boom, send. Okay, talk to you for the day. Even if it's just a, hey, want to see how your day is going, one line. You don't want to send that through the mail because now you've sent a stamp and it's not going to get there for a week. And then who knows if they're holding the mail or, you know, all kind of things. But, you know, with the email, it's pretty quick. Some inmates do have people set up Facebook accounts for them. But obviously the inmates aren't the ones who are able to check them. So they rely on someone else to check the messages and sometimes print them out. And that actually violates Facebook's terms of service, because you're not supposed to have a Facebook under somebody else's likeness, I guess. So if your Facebook is supposed to be you, so they could get it shut down. But I've seen numerous people who are incarcerated just pop up like, oh, people you may know. I'm like, actually, I do know that person. that's where you've been. So there is that, and I am thankful for the email system. It would be great if we could send pictures, if we could attach them to the email, because that's another thing that can be a daunting task, is many people don't print pictures out anymore. We take them on our phones, and that's where the pictures live forever. So to send pictures, we have to actually go print them out. And I do this maybe twice a year. I print out like $90 worth of pictures and I just make piles. I make everybody a pile and I send it. I said, don't ask me for pictures for another 9 months. There are apps though that will let you take pictures on your phone and they will print the pictures and send them. So, I mean, luckily for both the families and the inmates, there are companies out there that are trying to find ways to keep us better connected. Particularly in the age of technology where we're getting so far removed from sitting down and writing letters and taking pictures with our disposable cameras or the ones with the tall flash and going to Walgreens and getting them printed out. Yeah, I'm old enough to remember the tall flash.
In Connecticut, they have to pay too, though, right?
Or
I think they do.
Yes, and that's more substantial for them, because they're getting paid like 32 cents an hour. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, so that can be a hardship on them. Mm-hmm. And just the same with the phone. They have to pay for that, or you can pay ahead of time, and then they just kind of take the credits off of your account. Did you?
This is more just a comment. I'm a lawyer, and I represent a nice, gentle little lady who was desperate, and she held up a convenience store armed robbery. She was in FCI somewhere, and there's a law that was passed, Adoption Safe Families Act, which is federal. It says that if your child is out of your care for 15 out of the last 22 months, the goal has to change to adoption or something similar. So this woman was sentenced. She had a baby before she went, but the baby was in foster care. And because her sentence was more than 15 months, mm-hmm. the child was adopted. She lost her rights forever. She'll never see the child again. I just said the laws are very punitive, and I just wondered if you ever heard of that, or what do you think of that?
No, I don't think I've heard of that in particular, but I agree that they're very punitive. And I think people do things they shouldn't do. Yes, they should be punished, but I don't think everything is as black and white as our system makes it seem.
The law is an attempt to balance the rights of the child versus the parent. So the parent's given a certain period of time to clean up their act before the goal changes. When you're in prison, you can take parenting classes, mental health classes, mm-hmm. all kinds of classes, and in that respect, clean up your act, but you're not ready, willing, and able to take care of the child, so you're going to lose your rights. So just something to be aware of. It is the law. It's like the walls.
Yeah.
The walls are there until, maybe the law can be kind of more, aware of these are human beings who, to punish is one thing, but that's only part of justice. Mercy is also a part. And some better balancing or more refined way of looking at the rights of the incarcerated is a very worthwhile thing.
And everybody's... Everybody's situation and everybody's needs are different. I've taught in college level for over 16 years. And if you have a student who's struggling, you can just say, this is college. Or you can look at the student and see, what is it that you need help with, and why are these things problematic for you, and let me help you connect to the resources that can help you fix those things. Everybody doesn't need the same help. So if Elaine is struggling, I can't just say, go visit the Writer Center, because writing may not be her issue. She may need childcare, or, she may have a sick family member that's taking up a lot of her time. So I think that in our current system, we tend to be very prescriptive and think that everybody needs the same pill, I guess. But we're all different human beings. We eat different. We sleep different. We like different things. We have different issues on the inside, different things that cause us to exhibit different behaviors. So, our system needs to reflect that. As you said, we are human. And if you do something bad, then you should be punished. But there should also have some degree of humanness inserted into how you're being dealt with. Did you have one in the back?
You alluded to the cost of sending an email and the crappy cheaper. There's I've read about, never not heard any specifics, that there's a lot of costs associated with being in prison or visiting somebody in prison. Can you talk to that a little bit? Mm-hmm. It's got to be a burden.
Yeah, like I said, when my brother was down at SCI Pittsburgh, it took us about 20 minutes to get there, no big deal. Now I have one brother in Fayette, one in Somerset, so that's the cost of gas, turnpike tolls. If we take the kids with us, they're going to need to be fed, because even if they eat before they leave the house, they're still hungry before we get there. Then once we get there, There's a little plastic card we get with a chip on it, and you know, you might already have one from a previous visit, but you can load money onto the card because they no longer allow you to take money into the visiting room. They used to also have tokens, but they switched over to this card system, so it looks like just an ATM card. So you have to load up the card before you even get in there so that you can buy snacks and stuff. And they're not, I mean, the food quality is trash, and it's expensive. A sandwich, which I won't even eat when I go there because I'm a fairly healthy eater, and I can't allow myself to eat the food that's in the vending machines, but to my brothers, you would think it was like the best thing they've ever eaten. It could be $3.50 for some little chicken sandwich that has nothing. It's just a gross chicken patty and two cold pieces of bun. All of the drinks in the machine are, it's soda or it's some type of flavored beverage that has high fructose corn syrup in it. These things are, it's poison. So they're even, like, they're I'm going on a different tangent now other than the financial cost. I'm now going towards that, the health-based cost. But, I mean, I think about things like this because it's also not adding to the health of the inmate. The mental health or the actual physical health, these things tear your bodies down. But this is what you're given. These are your choices. You can't bring in something else. There's the cost of the phone calls. As Elaine said, they can pay for them out of their account, or you can set up an account on your end so where they don't have to pay. I think it's $25 is the minimum you're allowed to pay. So if once your balance gets low and you need to refill, $25 or more you pay to add more money to your phone account. And I think it might depend on how far the institution is, but the calls I've been getting have been about $1 or so. So it's not bad for me, a person who works, but for someone who makes, what did you say, 32 cents? Something like that. Some minimal amount. What is that, an hour?
Yeah.
32 cents an hour. You know, that dollar, that's 3 hours worth of their time. My brother Nathan, he works in the warehouse at Fayette, and he fell and broke his wrist. And he went to the medical people, and they put a splint, not a splint, a sling on him. And my mother and I had to call the prison and raise a big stink because he needed to see an orthopedic doctor, because if the bones in his wrist would have started healing improperly, they would have had to re-break his wrist in order to set it straight. Now, lucky for us, because we raised the stink, they got him to the orthopedic doctor. But unless you have somebody on the outside advocating for you, you're just kind of stuck. I knew someone who is actually my ex-fiance was incarcerated. He got a staph infection, and they were not treating him properly. They were just telling him, you know, just take some ibuprofen, and not getting him the antibiotics that he needed. And he actually started getting scarring from the staph infection until somebody started raising a stink. And it makes you think about how many people don't have somebody on the outside, or, you know, all their families died off, or they've disowned them, and they're just there, kind of waiting for the whole thing to end, which is definitely a sad thing. Did I answer your question? I know. I start ranting. I get on my health kick soapbox about high fructose corn syrup. They give it to you in the hospital, too. Yeah, don't drink that juice.
Let me take a different tactic right now. I'm curious. Your mother supports you.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of support system do you have, and do your brothers have, besides you? You know, are there people around them help them maintain perspective on everything that's going on?
I mean, Oscar in particular really enjoyed the think tank. I think that helped him separate himself mentally from what his current situation was. But I'm not sure, you know, how many, you know, friends they might have that come visit or write, but I don't imagine that it's a lot. For example, one of the guys who's in the think tank with my brother, I'm close friends with his brother, and he's actually never, ever gone to see his brother. I'm talking about Sean.
Oh, okay.
And how long has Sean been incarcerated? Long time. 20 years, something like that? Yeah, and my friend, who is his brother, has never gone to see him. He says, I won't go see him. So although that this lifestyle can be normal to us, you know, we almost expect to know somebody who's incarcerated, there are a lot of people who just won't go because they say, well, I don't want anything to do with that, or I don't have the money to go, or I don't have the time to go. I can't take off work and not get paid so I can go visit this person. They did that to themselves. They put themselves in that situation. And that's kind of the stance that my dad has in regard to this. He doesn't understand why my mom, you know, breaks her back to work so hard to pay for these lawyer fees and go visit my brother all the time, because he says, well, he did that to himself. And he put himself there. And I also thought, you know what? If I was the mother of this person who did it, I'd be doing the same exact thing, because I'm their mom. You know, if you don't have anybody else, hopefully you at least have your mom. Any other questions?
All Christians say the Our Father, forgive us. I used to say, because I grew up as a Catholic, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. I'm thinking of that, and how we don't forgive people in prison.
No.
Either as Christians or as a legal system, we don't forgive. We can't. We don't know how. We want to protect ourselves. We want to isolate the offender. But we're so far from discovering what it means to forgive. So just throw that out.
And I think in regard to that, you know, if we learn how to forgive people, then we might have to face the fact that we're part of the problem that created the circumstance that, you know, led them down the path that they're on. And nobody wants to admit that they're part of the problem. So it's easier to just say, you stay in that box because you were bad. And here's your crappy hamburgers and your high fructose corn syrup filled Snapple or Minute Maid juice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I also like Pennsylvania, and this is me not, I don't have any much knowledge about this, I wish I did, but our system for life incarceration is really different than that of many other states. If Oscar were in another state, he would very likely have been out, you know, years ago. You know, we have a basically, you know, life means life, you know, one, you know, if you have a homicide or a felony homicide, mm-hmm. where you're present, you know, for a homicide, committing another crime, you know, you're going to get life without a chance of parole in this state. But in another state, that is not common, right? So it's like, so part of what's going on with, and Oscar is in this category, is that he happened to commit a crime in Pennsylvania, where if he were in New Jersey, you know, or if he had done the exact same thing in most other states, he'd already be out. So it's a different, it's a very different kind of system that we're in here.
And to add on to that, during my brother's trial, he had a jury, and he had a whole list of charges that he was facing. And before the jury went into deliberation, the judge read off the definition of every single one of those charges. There was no cheat sheet given to them that said, here's the definitions, take these back with you and refer to them in case you have questions. It was, here are the definitions, boom, 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 boom. I'm going to, you know, expect all of you to remember all of the definitions and all of the nuances associated with the definitions while you go back and make your decision. And we're talking about the definitions between first-degree murder, second-degree, third-degree, manslaughter, just the differences between those in addition to the other charges that he was facing. I don't know about you, but my attention span is about this long. So I can't imagine the average person being able to remember all those and then go back into a room with other people to deliberate and you know, maintain those definitions in my head. So when the verdict came back that he was found guilty of first-degree murder, which, number one, doesn't even make sense as far as the case is concerned, my gut instinct said they didn't remember the definitions because it doesn't make sense. first-degree murder means you went there with the intention of committing that crime. I'm going to your house to kill you. That's first-degree murder. That is not at all what happened with my brother. My brother went to the mall with somebody he knew. On the way back from the mall, the guy said, stop over here at so-and-so's house. My brother said, okay. He didn't go to this house with the intention of killing someone. He stopped there on the way back from the mall because someone said, stop here for a couple minutes. He said, okay. That's not at all first-degree murder. But if you're someone who's not familiar with the legal system and the definitions of these charges, and you're just given this whole list, I mean, there's no possible way you could remember these. And the judge is not a very nice guy, so I don't see them feeling comfortable saying, excuse me, judge, could you repeat those, or could we have a definition list? So again, you know, my brother's fate was at the mercy of people who didn't remember the definitions, and I don't expect them to have remembered the definitions. But, and just going back to what Elaine says, now he's dealing with the results of that. And based on, you know, Pennsylvania's laws, there's no chance of him getting a second chance unless these other things that we're working on, you know, have some type of positive outcome. And as I mentioned, he has life plus 10 to 20. Plus 10 to 20 what? You know, what comes after? So are you going to hold him, you know, 10 to 20 years after he dies? It's just, you know, to me it seems like just an extra jab. Say not only are you going to stay here until you're no longer living, but you have 10 to 20 years after that to deal with this also. Go ahead.
So, we're facing maybe... Faith communities don't always do a good job of supporting people with family that's incarcerated, let alone returning citizens. It's not pushing us up. Do you have any experience with that, or what's your any sense of that?
Just ask again.
Faith communities supporting or not supporting you or your brother?
I think my mom is lucky with the church that she attends. They're familiar with the situation because she's been a member of that church for a long time. But because it's something that a lot of people may not be comfortable talking about, they just don't feel comfortable letting other people know that's an aspect of their lives. And because there are people out there who don't have that experience, I think they don't know how to be supportive. So they just don't know what to do and may say, okay, well, I don't know what to do. I'm just not going to do anything. There is a group she was working with called, Fight for Life or something like that, which I want to say is faith-based, but I'm not totally sure. I don't even know how people would go about reaching out to those people. Because even in a church such as this one, what are you supposed to do? Make an announcement? You know, if anybody has any family who's incarcerated, you know, meet us in the vestibule for tea so we can talk about it. It's not an easy conversation, and someone might not feel comfortable revealing that part of their lives.
We actually have a group, I believe it's the jail that does actually separate prayer with the inmates. They're part of
I think if there was, there might be, this might already exist, I don't know, but if there was a way that people could find out who the inmates are who don't have any family and don't have a support system, I think those are probably the most important people to reach out to because they have nobody and they're still humans, and humans are not single solitary beings. They need contact. They need some type of reassurance that even though they're incarcerated, they're still human and they still have feelings, and that somebody does actually care about them, even if it's just getting a Christmas card.
We have 5 minutes left, but does anybody have any other questions?
I just have kind of a follow-up on that interesting question about the faith communities. It seems like the question you're asking is sort of like, what can we do to help people, whatever church who have family members are incarcerated, and your answer was well, you know, my mom's church that she's a member of helps her. And I was thinking about that, kind of the distance, you know, the question of, like, which church, you know, church people, you know, people in churches might want to help, but in a sense it's easiest to help if you actually are organically a member of, you know, of the people that you're trying to help, right? And so I wonder, it almost made me think, like, a three-part thing where, you know, like, somehow a home church or community church of the person who's incarcerated is most likely to be able to help. So if some extra, you know, body, like this one wanted to help, they might want to do it in combination with that home community or that home church. I mean, it's like, but maybe they don't have, maybe that's imperialistic or something, you know. Does that make any sense? Like, you know, somehow, like, what needs to happen is, like, you know, this church, if they wanted to help, like, somehow try to work together with community instead of working directly with incarcerated people. Or maybe that doesn't make any sense. Or you could do both.
I'd say do both.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of doing everything.
Like, just going in, yeah. Like, if this church just wanted to, like, send a group in to go have, like, what they're doing, a prayer meeting, or... Yeah.
Yes, Norm?
To build on what Elaine said, it seems like you already have the foundation. You go to the group that goes to the African American church, right? And you got that sort of organic, that's a natural thing that's happening right there. When you start crossing those boundaries of what we call race, and you're getting together this common ground of your people of faith, the more authentic and the more real your connection with other people develop. The opportunity will present themselves, all you have to do is follow up.
That's true, we've had some here that
energy. Okay, you don't get out of that stuff off the GP block.
We're organizing a quarterly app, so we'll probably get involved when we get actually one step.
We should talk about that, right? Because Tony is.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'm going to share a cartoon I saw. A little boy sitting on a stool in the corner of the house. And he said, I'm going to feel this case all the way up to grandma. Our legal system is grandma.
Anybody else?
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.